हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमाविर्विषावहै श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, Shloka Nusharanam, summary of verses. Verses 1 to 15, the events leading up to Vidura leaving home. Verses 16 to 24, Vidura remains on pilgrimage and meets Uddhava. And verses 25 to 45, Vidura asks Uddhava about Krishna and his family. Verses 1 to 15, the events leading up to Vidura leaving home. At the end of Canto 2, in verses 2:10, 48 through 50, Shaunaka Rishi inquires from Suta Goswami about Vidura. Shaunaka had previously heard that Vidura met Maitreya Muni while on pilgrimage. In the closing verse of Canto 2, Suta began his reply by informing Shaunaka that he will now repeat the talks between Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Purukit, which concerns Vidura's meeting and discussion with Maitreya Muni. Right? So you're going on the element here. Oops. Thank you. You're going on the principle is there's discussions going on. But the discussions, how they're going, is according to the discussions, the questions of Shaunaka Rishi. Right? So you're getting the whole conversation, but he'll bring out different aspects that are there. Because, yes, does that make sense? So they'll eventually get everything, but they'll be going through it according to how he's asking. That's why it gets better. Right? Because you have the original, what Vyasadeva has heard. Right? And then his compilation of that. But then he's speaking that to Sukadeva. Right? So Sukadeva will know it in a particular form. But when he explains it to Parikit Maharaj, it'll be according to Parikit Maharaj's questions. Right? And so then that will make it specifically relevant to what they're doing. Right? Now again, that same thing is happening and by Shaunaka. Right? Because so for us, going through in that way, then it will be very nice because we're not under the pressure of we're going to be dying in a week.
As far as we know.
Yeah, as far as we know. But I'm saying is he knows, so therefore he'll, you know, you might have an element of how the way the conversation goes may go in a particular way. But now Shaunaka and the Rishis, they're someone who want to know, who want to understand. So they're going to ask these things to have. So then that will go very nicely with how we're hearing it. Right? So then Vyasadeva, in documenting the Bhagavatam, he's using that conversation. Right? It's already been published before, but now it's been written in this form. Right? So all the Puranic material has all been written after Suta Goswami has spoken it.
Gives a certain flavor.
Yes, it gives. And then you have a consistent author, because everything's always Suta Goswami and Shaunaka Rishi, right? So then it has a very, you know, specific flavor. So it works very nicely that way. You don't have different flavors. Mm. Is that, yeah. Mm. Yes.
spoken by Sita.
Yes, all 18 Puranas. They're all spoken, you know, the 18 Puranas in Mahabharata, they're all spoken by Sutta to Shonaka. Yeah, the sages at Naimisharan. Like that. Not necessarily one time, just at different times. And, you know, because they're doing a 1,000-year sacrifice. You know, so people are around for a while then. So then, you know, they got time. You know, so that every time he comes through, then he comes and visits and then tells, they discuss another Purana. Like that. And then even there, we're only dealing 400,000 verses. Because the, so Vyasadeva, what he's compiled is what is going to be what we can absorb. Because otherwise there's beyond what we can absorb. Because there's, what was it, 1 billion verses? Yeah, 1 billion verses. So we're only dealing with 400,000. So very small, and we think that's so big. Like that. Yes?
And those 400,000, which Puranas are included?
All 18.
All 18?
Yes. All. No, Mahabharata is separate. That's another 100,000. But like that, the Mahabharata on the other planets are also bigger. On the heavenly planets and that. So it's just depending upon what you're doing. So what's given to us is what will work for us. Like for, I've heard that for Yamaraj, his form of the Bhagavatam, he has all the stories for all 8,400,000 species of life. Since that's what he does all day, is put people into these species, he can always remember Krishna from that. Like that. So you have different, you know, in Brahma Loka, that you'll have the greatest amount. Because everybody there is personified Vedas. You know, so they can just talk Shastra all day. You know, Bhagavad Gita personified can discuss things with Chaitanya Charitamrita, I mean, personified, right? You know, they can talk all day. It's not a problem.
Nice association.
Yeah, it's good association like that, yeah. So, yeah. Okay, so he inquires about this, so now the discussion starts. Right? Does that make sense? So this is slight difference in the Vedic concept, is that transition, that's going to be part of the previous thing. You have the thing, what it's going to be, and then it turns into the topic. Well, in the Western, we would move it back and then take it from here, but then the problem is we don't get the connection. Because the Veda is about the connection from one topic to the next. Right? Well, generally in our modern study, we take this is one topic, that's one topic. So we try to find that line and then split it.
And that's why it's difficult to apply. Anyway.
That's, yeah, it's more difficult to apply because you don't have the connections. Right? So that's why the questions are so important, because that's what's connecting things, that's what's making things move. Does that make sense? So that's why we're going off of these questions. And then the question is the basis of then the specific discussion that we'll have. Right? Because all discourses that are there, they're based on the questions. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Now in the opening section of Canto 3, verses 1 through 15, Srila Sukadev tells how Duryodhana insulted Vidura, ordering him thrown out of the palace. Vidura thus left Hastinapur for pilgrimage. Quote, after hearing how Sukadeva Goswami describes the Lord's creation of the manifested universes, Shonaka Rishi requests Sutta Goswami to narrate how Vidura comes to leave home and later on receive instructions from Maitreya Rishi. In reply, Sutta Goswami relates these topics to the sages of Naimisharanya, just as Sukadeva Goswami had narrated them to Maharaj Parikit. Thus, at the start of the first chapter, Sukadeva Goswami speaks to Maharaj Parikit about Mahatma Vidura and Maitreya Muni. He mentions a rhetorical question that Vidura asked the sage about the glories of the Pandava's residence, which Lord Krishna entered as freely as if it were his own. Quote, what else is there to say about the residential house of the Pandavas? Sri Krishna, the Lord of everything, acted as your minister. He used to enter that house as if it were his own, and he did not take any care of Duryodhana's house. Footnote 3. Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport to verse 2. According to the Gaudiya Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy, anything which satisfies the senses of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, is also Sri Krishna. For example, Sri Vrindavan Dham is not different from Sri Krishna. Tadhama Vrindavanam. Because at Vrindavan, the Lord enjoys the transcendental bliss of his internal potency. Similarly, the house of the Pandavas was also the source of transcendental bliss for the Lord. It is mentioned here that the Lord identified the house with his own self. Thus, the house of the Pandavas was as good as Vrindavan. And Vidura should not have given up that place of transcendental bliss. Therefore, the reason for his quitting the house was not exactly family misunderstanding. Rather, Vidura took the opportunity to meet Rishi Maitreya and discuss transcendental knowledge. Right? Because staying at home, there's not a lot of transcendental knowledge being discussed. Right? You know, you don't find, you know, great philosophical discussions with Duryodhana and Shakuni, Karna. You know, it never seems to come up. Somehow or another, strangely. Either that somehow it didn't get documented or something. But it appears that there's a good chance it wasn't happening. Otherwise, so he took the opportunity because, as he said, this is a place where the Lord always came. So even if there's people who don't know how to behave, it doesn't mean that the place is not valuable. Right? You can be in Vrindavan and there may be people who are not interested in appreciating Vrindavan. But it doesn't mean that Vrindavan has any less validity. Right? So the same thing is that the dham always is beneficial. So he's leaving for association because the most important thing in being in the dham is association. That's the real thing. Right? Because otherwise, if you just come, it's a pilgrimage place, take bath, then the cows and the asses, they're doing the same thing. They live in the dham, you know, they eat the grass, they go down in the river. Right? So we're only getting as much benefit as they get. But if you associate with the saintly persons, then it's said that's where you get the real benefit. So Vidura took advantage to meet Maitreya Rishi. Right? Because Maitreya is not he's not just a regular guy, right? You know, so it's good to take advantage. Yes.
As for Maitreya, he was not actually a devotee, especially on the level of a Vidura. So how would this be a good association from the point of view of Vidura?
But they're transcendentalists. So on the platform of transcendental, it's not mundane. So then there's so many things you can discuss on that level. As we mentioned, is a transcendentalist, there's that appreciation of transcendence. That's just how deeply their appreciation goes. So then you can discuss all kinds of topic matter. Does that make sense?
The point was that it's not devotion. It might be transcendental.
Okay, but then look at what's happening at home. Not transcendental, and not even piously mundane.
But then he met Udhava first.
Yes.
Udhava was devotional, transcendental and devotional. And then he had to go through Maitreya.
No, but he had certain questions, so then Maitreya is the one to answer.
So those questions specifically?
Yes. Yeah. There's also Udhava, he's been also told he's supposed to go to Bhadarikasha. Right? So that's where he's going. And no, he's still there. So that's what he spends. Yes, because you have specific questions, you go to the person who has those answers. And you're dealing with the transcendentalist, so then, you know. Because also, I remember that Maitreya, he heard all this instruction from Krishna himself before he left. So he can't be too ordinary of a person, that Krishna personally instructed him. Right? And then that instruction came to Vidura. So then, you know, not bad. Yes?
I think that, as far as I remember, Krishna gave Uddhava more of a rasa instruction and to Maitreya more of a tattva.
Yes, okay.
Because he also spoke to Uddhava before he left.
Yes, that's true. Mm-hmm. Yes. But then Vidura's question must have been something that needed to be answered by Maitreya. Right? Because otherwise, then, that would be, you know, part of the 10th canto, or 11th canto. Though Uddhava did, because 11th canto is Krishna's instructions to Uddhava. So you have the whole range, the whole technical tattva. But you're dealing also on the platform of here is, if you look at it on the other level, then you have Yamaraj basically speaking with someone who's like disciple of Brihaspati, and then you have the sage, Maitreya. So, they're all kind of on the same universal standard of understanding. So it'll work nice. Yes.
Maitreya Muni, he also heard Vishnu Purana from Parashara Muni.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So he's not an ordinary person. He's quite special. King Parikit wishes to know where, when, and why the meeting between Vidura and Maitreya took place. Saint Vidura, the king says, was a great and pure devotee of the Lord, and therefore his questions to His Grace Rishi Maitreya must have been very purposeful, on the highest level, and approved by learned circles. So the whole idea is that it's purposeful, it's not just to know. Right? Just to know, that's the jigyasu. And it's not a strong position to be in, right? That means Krishna's recommendation, the lowest level you want to be at is jnani, which means they want to actually know the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? But relationship is not so much about knowing. It's about serving and interacting. That's why the jnani is still considered within the neophyte platform. But lower than that, but that's stable because its connection is with the Lord. So that's a solid neophyte. But the jigyasu is simply they want to know. It's interesting. It sounds, that looks nice. And then you go after that. So that's just the speculative platform. Because it could be anything. Anything that catches your attention, you could be. Does that make sense? Like let's say you have a connoisseur. He likes eating nice food. So he comes across a vegetarian restaurant. They have some nice food. He eats it. He likes it. But at the same time, as if some other restaurant comes out with something, he'll eat that too. So it's not that he's committed. Well, you see is the jnani, there's a commitment. Because it's about understanding knowledge and connection with Krishna. For the jigyasu, it's more about just understanding knowledge. Does that make sense? So therefore purposeful. It's something to apply. So that this is then you could say is the standard of the Vedic Academy. Right? It has to be purposeful on the highest level, right? So it's connected to the Lord and approved by learned circles means the approach is approved by them. Right? The topic, the approach, everything like that. So that being approved by them, then it becomes good. Yes? No? Okay. Yes?
It can be done only if there is a consistency.
Yes.
To know what we want to get.
Yes, yes. But that's the whole idea of association, because in association, then we learn what is useful, what is purposeful. What is the highest level, what is approved. That makes sense, because otherwise, depending upon who you associate with, they have so many ideas of what is purposeful. Because when it's a common term to be used, just being practical. So the pragmatist, yes.
Pragmatist.
No, I was just thinking pragmatist. Statistical. he was very pragmatistical in his approach to yeah. It's always more fun. Yeah. So they're being practical, but their practical is not on the highest level. It's only basically on the level of niti for economics, for gain. That's all. So it doesn't consider the social, right? Unless the social is going to generate economics, right? It's not on the platform of liberation, and it's not on the platform of devotion. So therefore, it's practical, but it's not on the highest level, and it's not approved by the learned circles, right? Because even in niti, it shouldn't go against dharma. But if it does, then you know that you'll get a reaction. So therefore, that's not approved. Niti that's in support of dharma, then that will be approved. In a sense, so therefore, you're getting all of these levels. Now that's something special. So that's what you want to look for. That's what you're trying to get. In his purport to verse 6, Srila Prabhupada explains that the questions and answers among different classes of men have different value. Inquiries by mercantile men in a business exchange cannot be expected to be highly purposeful in spiritual values. Questions and answers by different classes of men can be guessed by the caliber of the persons concerned. In Bhagavad Gita, the discussion was between Lord Sri Krishna and Arjuna, the Supreme Person and the Supreme Devotee, respectively. Because you have Nara and Narayan, so they're an incarnation. So the Supreme Lord and the Supreme Devotee. So then there's going to be good discussion. You know that all these three are going to be. It's approved by learned circles. The Lord himself approves. And he's the Lord of the learned circles, right? The highest level, it's about the Lord. Instructions by the Lord is purposeful and how you can take this and use it in your life, come to the transcendental position. Right? The Lord admitted Arjuna to be his devotee and friend, Bhagavad Gita 4.3. And therefore, any sane man can guess that the discussion was on the topic of the Bhakti Yoga system. As a student, Maharaj Parikshit was serious about learning the science of God. And Sukadeva Goswami was a bona fide spiritual master in the transcendental science. Both of them knew that the topics discussed by Vidura and Rishi Maitreya were elevated. And thus, Maharaj Parikshit was very interested in learning from the bona fide spiritual master. Because, in other words, he says that he met him and discussed. You know, he met Maitreya, they had some discussion. Okay, so that's just facts. But now, if you put this together, what Prabhupada mentions, now you have this person now, you have, you know, these topmost, personalities. They have a discussion, what are they going to talk about? Right? You know, they're not talking about how to get over some glitch on Facebook, right? You know, like that. They're going to be talking about something very elevated. So now, naturally, then, because he was serious about learning Parikshit Maharaj and Sukadeva Goswami knows the subject matter, therefore, he said, what was that discussion? Right? That's what you want to know. Does that make sense? You know, that's the whole thing. Like, in the morning, the birds are chirping and that. Is anybody asking, what are they saying? And nobody cares. Right? So... okay. In answer, Sukadeva Goswami briefly relates the events of how Dhritarashtra committed impious activities to support his dishonest sons. King Dhritarashtra became blind under the influence of impious desires to nourish his son, and thus he set fire to the lacquer house to burn his fatherless nephews, the Pandavas. Right? So here the blindness talking about is not that he's physically blind. Because even though he's physically blind, his training in that, he was a Rajarshi. He knew the Shastra very well, like that. But the difficulty is because of his attachment to his sons, then he would let that knowledge slide and not consider. So then he would commit impious activities because of that attachment. Does this make sense? Right? But it didn't mean that he didn't know. But because of this, that's where he becomes blind. So not only he's blind, he's technically unqualified, but he is there, the king, it's going on, Bhishma Dev's there, others are seeing that it'll happen properly, right? Mm. Right? But at the same time, he becomes blind now because of his attachment to his son. Therefore, now this is real blindness. Yes?
But can we say that he didn't know because he didn't apply?
you could see is you have the knowledge itself, and you can discuss it, know what goes where. That's one thing. Then when the attachment comes up, then it's hard to follow. Just like, you know, there's so many things that one should do. Like you decide, okay, I'm doing this. And you can give so many reasons why you should do it. But when the time comes, then you don't. Why not? You understand? So if you're just having a academic discussion, you know your stuff. So that means if you actually ask Dhritarashtra a philosophical question or a Shastric question, he can give you answers. But as soon as you add into it the equation of practical application in his son, that's where then he becomes blind. So that's the thing. That's why you see sometimes he's giving very good advice, and sometimes he's not. You know? So that's what's happening here. So that's what's being pointed out. That position is weak. You one has to avoid that. Because otherwise it didn't work out good for either him or his son. Like that. Yeah. Yes?
In Mahabharata, it seems that Dhritarashtra was trying to dissuade Duryodhana not to fight.
That's there. Because, you see, as a Rajarshi, he knows the effects. But because his son wants, he goes along with it. Because he wants to see his son happy. You know, natural position of the father. But he doesn't have the real strength in that because he is blind. So if he's blind, what does that mean? He's really dependent upon everybody else. That's why a blind person shouldn't be king, because you don't even know what's out there. Right? I'm not sure where the story's from. I don't think it's a European. It's either a Middle Eastern or it's an Indian story, but it may be in the Mughal line. But there's a story about a blind king. And then, you know, everything's going on, the ministers this and that, and one time then the ministers become greedy. So then they're telling him this and that. And then somebody, they decide to get rid of the king. You know, but you know, whatever it is, you don't have to do much to get rid of a blind guy. It's not like, you know, you have a problem there. So then the minister comes up with this thing that they're being attacked by this other kingdom. We want to keep him safe, so you know, keep him in. You know, he should go and stay in his apartments. You know, we have guards and protecting, and you know, this way he'll be the most safe. And you know, then they put him inside. You know, but then. I forget what it is, but they come out to the point where finally it is that the king puts the key under the door and tells the minister to lock it from outside. But all the time is that the minister's presenting it as he's just following orders. And so that last point is that, you know, he's telling the king, yes, yes, your majesty. And then he's in his apartments. They can just go on and say this and that's happening, and then they'll go around the kingdom as they like. So that's the thing. He's dependent. He can't tell what's going on. So that's why it's not. But Dhritarashtra's in a fortunate position because you have Bhishma and Pandu, you know, Vidura, like this. Drona, they're not people who are going to cheat him. So it's only because of them he can do this. If he was in any other kingdom, he wouldn't have lasted at all. Like that, but because of this, so it's only by the grace of these religious persons that his position is being maintained. But, you know, being overly confident of that, he's too dependent on his son. So his son's taking advantage.
So it actually makes the situation worse.
Yes. But that's why you have all these dynamics of religion and irreligion. Right? Because, as we said, niti not connected to religion is not religious. It may be practical, but it doesn't mean it's religious. It doesn't mean it will give a long-term effect. Therefore, it's not considered ideal. Okay. The king did not forbid his son, Dushasana's abominable action of grabbing the hair of Draupadi, the wife of the godly king Yudhishthira, even though her tears washed the red dust on her breast. Footnote 4. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary to verse 7. Kuru Deva Devyaha refers to Draupadi. She washed away the kumkuma on her breast by her tears. Right? So another thing is somebody's upset and that's there. Another thing, they're crying. You know, there's a little bit of a tear. But this means it's enough tears to actually wash the kumkum from her breast. That's a lot of crying. That's very distressed. Right? So that's the point being brought out here. Also indicated that she would wash away the kumkum on the breast of the enemy's wives with their tears when she would have their husbands killed. Right? Because you have the element is that it refers to the washing away of the kumkum on her breast, but it also means why? Because of lamentation. But because you're insulting a chaste woman, it means that all those men involved, they will also be destroyed. So what's that going to leave? All those women. Because that's the real difficulty. Is there. Because in her social system, you know, it means what's going to be more of a problem? The men seeing you naked or the women seeing that you've been seen naked by the men? The second one. That's much worse. You know, because the men are going to forget about it. You know, in fact, they won't think it's a bad thing. You know, so if they think of Draupadi, they'll always, you know, think of have a smile. You know, it's just, you know, she's good. You know, like that. But the women, they're going to harass, they'll never let that one go. So that's actually the greater insult. Because it's in the court. If it was private, that's another thing, but it's in the court. So in the court means above the court you have all the jolly, so all the queens of the palace and everybody can see. They can watch if they want. They don't, you know. Does that make sense? You know, that way then you can keep tabs on things, right? So then after the court when the husband comes into the inn, then you can say, hey, what about this? Like that. So you can still run things. Srila Sukadev continues by referring to a time after the 13 exile of Pandavas, when Vidura was invited into the house of his elder brother Dhritarashtra. He advised his brother, you must now return the legitimate share of the kingdom to Yudhishthira, for he has undergone great distress due to your offenses. Right? It means you've enjoyed for 13 years now, you know, his whole kingdom and everything, so now it's time that he gets his legitimate share. He is supported by Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the revengeful Bhima. Right? So, from both sides. One is, Krishna is the one who runs everything. So, you know that. So, therefore, you shouldn't... Duryodhana doesn't have the potency, right? Krishna does. And then if you're going to talk about Duryodhana and his potency, then to match that, you have Bhima and his potency. Right? So, they're basically equals. Now, of the equals, Bhima is upset, right? So generally the case is the person who has that more passion, you know, if it's able to be controlled, is going to be the winner. Because he has more to fight for, right? So he'll be in the offense, right? While Duryodhana will be in the defense. It's always a weak position. Right? I think there's a saying, the strongest defense is offense. Right? Because people have to deal with what you're dealing with. You can't come up with something new. Well, they can come up with new things all the time. So the offense is always strong. So he's pointing out is, one, from the universal point of view, is you don't have a chance. And the other chance is that Bhima's back. And so then, you know, there's nothing to stop him. Before, Yudhishthira said, don't kill him because of the gambling match and everything. But now, what's to stop him? Right, you know, so you should be careful what alleys he walks down, right? You know. You are maintaining offense personified, Duryodhana, as your son, but because he is envious of Lord Krishna, you have become devoid of all auspiciousness. Relieve yourself of this ill fortune and do good to the entire world. Right? Yeah. Yes.
This matter of attachment is very difficult to deal, as yes. We discussed previously. It appears that the mind is not controlled by intelligence. But
it can be.
But in his case, he can't
do
it.
No, it's not. That's the whole point we were discussing yesterday, is that this citta then can be controlled by the intelligence, or it can be controlled by the senses. Right? Because it can accept and reject. So if it accepts that higher understanding is the basis of accepting and rejecting, then the citta, the mind, will work according to intelligence. But if it's not, it'll work according to senses. So it'll just pick and choose what'll be the best sense gratification. Like that. So these are the choices, because these are the two sides that you have. Because the mind is sitting there between the intelligence and the senses. Right? So it'll choose one of these. So if by intelligence, then that alters your identity. Right? Which is going to be the basis of your decision. So if you accept an identity of functioning under intelligence, then it's going to work nicely. But if you accept that I am a sense enjoyer, then you're going to work in the other way. So you'll still use the intelligence, but it'll be engaged by the mind for sense gratification rather than as a determination what is the actual proper course of action. You know what I'm saying? So you always have, there's always that element of free will. But it's just a matter of practice. Right? Because it takes time to, if you want to work under intelligence, it takes practice, because the mind is so used to just working for sense gratification. So, you know, we have to again and again, and then slowly, slowly, then it comes, and then we can function that way.
Because then later, when Vidura preached to him, he was able to give everything up, but there wasn't much left.
Of course. If there's very little left, it's easier to give up what the very little is left. You know, it's like this. You're working from emperor of the world to king of a single city. You know. I mean, it does have that romantic element, you know, the Italian, you know, city kingdoms, you know, like that. So Hastinapur, maybe not as many canals as Venice or something, but, you know, still not bad, you know, like that. So that having 100 sons, that who has 100 sons? You know, once you have 100 kids, you know, someone has 10 kids, okay, that's, you know, he's got a lot of kids, it has some confidence. But if he's 100 sons, and they're all very qualified, very dynamic, you know, then that's more, because then you know that, you know, whatever, effort they make, you know, economically, politically, or whatever the field, then as soon as those sons mature, then they'll be able to take responsibility and expand that, you know, 10 times. So he's in a very... So now he's got 100. Right? So now all the sons are gone. His kingdom is gone. Like that, you know, Karna's gone, Shakuni's gone. Like that. So, and Vidura's not around. So it's not like he's got a whole lot left, you know. And not only that, he is having this position not because of his own arrangement. It's only by the mercy of Yudhishthira, right? Because, you know, most people would look at it, okay, now he's behaved badly all this time, so therefore, you know, what does he deserve to be a king? He'll just be an old man sitting in his room, right? But he's saying, no, because he's a Kshatriya, then he should be king of something. It says he's always sat in Hastinapur, right? So then let him manage that. And Yudhishthira will manage everything else, you know, the rest of the kingdom, like that. You know, so therefore now it's like, it's very obvious what you did wrong. So there's a good chance that every day he's thinking about all the things he did wrong, and if he had just done like this or that, then things would have worked out a little better. You know, there's also that anxiety as well. If Yudhishthira does get in charge, then what'll be his position? You know, because how he thinks and how his son thinks. But now he finds out that Yudhishthira takes care nicely. You know, so then you know, in that kind of mentality, then it becomes a little easier. You know, therefore, you know, when we don't respond to getting nice facilities and therefore getting more enthusiastic to do service, then we generally tend to respond to everything being taken away. Then, you know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is that the sooner we respond, the more pleasant, that's all. Because the point is that the response, because for Krishna it's not about retribution. Bhima, yes. But for Krishna, no. Because for Krishna, it's just the living entities. It's his material energy, so the living entities naturally do something wrong. So for Krishna, it's not a problem. Yeah, so really in this the whole equation, the only one to worry about is Bhima. But, yeah, the Lord's going to support the devotee, so it will go that way. Because it probably points out in the purports is that he's only tolerating all these insults simply because it will come out as the whole solution to the world problem will work out better if everything comes together and there's this one single war. Otherwise, Krishna would go around and kill everybody. But then you'll just think, yeah, Krishna went around and defeated all the different kings, all the demoniac kings, and that's it. Anyone's going to talk anymore? No, but you're talking the Battle of Kurukshetra. People are still talking about it 5,000 years later. So that's the whole thing. One, officially get rid of everything. But because the pastimes are to inspire the devotees, therefore having a battle like this, now that's going to be more inspiring. So therefore, then he does it in this way. But otherwise, Krishna could have taken care of it before. Even earlier, when Krishna visited Yudhishthira in the forest the first time, and he says he'll go back now and destroy them, and Yudhishthira said, "No, don't." Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur speaks in more detail in his purport to verse 13. But my son, Duryodhana, will oppose this. In answer to this, Vidura speaks, he is fault personified. He has arisen as a result of your sins committed for 10 million lifetimes. Wow. That's bad. So it appears Duryodhana is a lot worse than we're giving him credit for. We don't appreciate the full. He is fault personified because he hates the Supreme Lord, Purusha Dvit. Moreover, he has entered externally your houses and internally even your mind and intelligence. Moreover, you encourage him and think of him as your son, but he is not your son. Apatya, or son, means he who does not fall away, patati, from us. You can guess that if you reject Krishna, then prosperity will also go away. Please understand that Lakshmi has left your house. What is the solution? Give up inauspiciousness, Ashaishvam, Duryodhana, immediately. If I reject my son, there will be a black spot for my family. No, it will be a benefit to the family, for it is said that one can give up one person of the family for the benefit of the whole family. Otherwise, your whole family will perish. Dhritarashtra did not take this advice very seriously. In his purports to verse 9 and 14, Srila Prabhupada explains the reason. That is the way of persons who have no credit of pious deeds. By past pious deeds, one may become a king of a country. But because the results of pious acts of Duryodhana and company were dwindling, it became evident from their actions that they were sure to lose the kingdom to the Pandavas. Right? So by piety, they got the kingdom, but they're not able to maintain it because they're not performing pious activities. Not enough to maintain a kingdom. Right? They politically do everything properly, but that's niti. Right? Means it's by dharma that you maintain your position, not by niti. The businessman doesn't have money because he's using niti. He has money because in previous life he's performed dharma. Because otherwise, so many people are doing the niti. Like the guy writes the book. He's made plenty of money. But everybody else who reads the book and tries to follow it, it doesn't work. Why not? They don't have the piety. Does that make sense? Like, let's say I have a book. Okay, let's say, okay, how to be socially accepted, right? First of all, find the best neighborhood in the city. Within that, find the best, you know, location. Within that, find the best building or that, and then purchase yourself something there, if not the whole thing, right? Okay, two, now go out and buy yourself, you know, any one or a number or combination of these particular cars, like that. Go down to, you know, Civil Row and get yourself a suit, if not a few, like that. You know, right?
Yeah.
Okay? And then, you know, go to these particular programs, these particular parties, move with these particular people. And then, hey, you're a success. Right? Simple, straightforward. That guy did it. He wrote it in his book. He's still making royalties. But now the guy who buys the book, can he do this? Why not? He doesn't have the pious credit. He doesn't have the money. Right? And even if he had the money, how would he know what's the best place? You know what I'm saying? They'll always do something wrong. They'll always pick the wrong thing. You know?
They'll get proud.
They'll
get proud.
They'll get proud. So many things. Whatever. It won't work because they don't have the piety. So that's the whole point, is that it's piety that maintains. So Duryodhana doesn't have the piety. Enough to be king, but not enough to maintain it. Yes.
In case of this family, Krishna was trying to convince them, or he was kind of trying to share,
yes,
whatever he had, or piety, or whatever it is, benefits. But even then, they didn't have enough piety even to accept that.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, yes. Like that. Because the point is mundane piety, even you have, is not enough to be God conscious. So God consciousness, that will generate piety. But piety can't generate God consciousness. Mm. Right?
So it works this way, but
not the other way. Because that's the whole point, is karma and gyan can't give you bhakti. It can't give you understanding of the Lord. So even though you're very intelligent, you can't understand. It was like that one conversation Prabhupada had, and there was some big Indian scholar, you know, Sanskrit, you know, spoke Sanskrit, everything. I think he was speaking to Prabhupada in Sanskrit, Prabhupada answered back in English. Right? So one is that the devotees could hear what he said. Two, the guy knew by his answer, he knew what he said. You know, like that. And so he had asked him, you know, what is the Supreme? The Supreme Absolute Truth. And the man, the scholar, saying, well, that's very difficult, you know, so many things, so many opinions, and he goes on a bit. And when he's not really able to answer, Prabhupada turns to one of the kids, a Gurukul kid, 8-year-old, says, what's the Supreme Absolute Truth? He says, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then he turns back to the scholar and says, even this 8-year-old knows. Why is it you don't know? You're a scholar. So that's the thing, is that great intelligence isn't enough, or great piety isn't enough to know the Lord. It's only by His mercy. So they didn't have the Bhakti Sukriti. Right? If they had taken advantage of, Bhishma's association, Vidura's association, then they could have, you know, advanced so much. And then naturally they would have, you know, Yudhishthir, Arjuna, everybody. They're surrounded by devotees, but they were inimical towards the Lord, Duryodhana. And because of that, then they couldn't take advantage. So no matter how much piety they had, it's all lost. Because as soon as you go against the Lord and the devotees, even if you have some piety, it starts to go away very quickly. Is that... Yes?
Piety can be material or spiritual?
Piety, yes. See, it's that piety means... Basically, you could say like this. Piety means doing what's authorized. Right? Because the Shastras recommend things, that Krishna, He is the Shastra. So that means Krishna is the rules. So you follow the rules, that's pious. Now, if you follow the rules to please Krishna, that's devotional. If you follow the rules just because of the material benefit, that's material. Right? So that's the whole point, is why is it the materialist is still called piety? Because they're following Krishna's rules. they're at least accepting the elephant. Why did I say elephant instead of element? I always said that. Maybe because we're close to the elephants. they exude an influence or something, so I have to always talk about them. Is that the... It was something about elements. But now that instead of elephants, but then what elements were we talking about? Yes. Well, the elephants of the offense to the, you know, to the holy name. So, because they're following the rules that devotees would follow, they get credit for that. But they only get the mundane credit. They don't get the spiritual credit. Devotees follow the pious work and please Krishna. They get the material and the spiritual. The materialist only follows the material. He only gets that aspect. Right? So it doesn't... Now, if you know the Shastra and that's your reason for following, you're going to get more piety than if you're just doing that out of habit from previous life. Like, because, you know, Bharata... is the central terminal, right? You come here from up and down. So you come back to there, and then going out to anywhere else on this mandala, then that's going to happen because, how you say, you have enough piety to maintain human life at this level, but not enough to be part of the culture. So therefore, last life you were part of this culture. Then you would be having habits that generate that piety. Therefore, next life, you're going to tend to behave in that way. So you'll be pious. Of course, depending upon your association and that, you may maintain that and cultivate it or lose it. Right? So they're performing pious activities, but not knowing really why they're pious. It's just good. Why do you give in charity? Because it's good. It can't really explain any more than that. Right? No, not because the Shastra says it's about the sharing, because otherwise you get, it's about detachment. Right? Because if we're attached to things, then it's about us. If we're detached, then that's favorable to pleasing Krishna. Right? So therefore, within this world, those activities that are done as sacrifice for pleasing others. Right? So penance... Austerity, charity, and penance. Did we discuss this point about penance? Because remember, I think it was your question. Was what was the difference between penance and austerity? It was a long time ago. I came across the answer about a month ago. Like that. Yeah, you know, it was good. Like that. So, it means that austerity is always defined as the proper performance of your duties. But, in performing your duties, there will be physical difficulty, right? The example given of cooking in the summer or taking bath in the winter. So that physical difficulty of the austerity, that's called penance, right? The overall thing is that you're performing your duty, that's austerity. But the physical discomfiture that comes from that, but that you tolerate because you want to do the duty, that's penance. So that's why you see sometimes they're basically the same thing. It's just whether you're bringing out the duty part of it or the difficulty part of it. So when you bring out the duty, you say austerity. If you're bringing out difficulty, you say penance. Sometimes if you want to mention both, you say penance and austerity. Does that work?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Good. Simple. Huh? Yeah. Yes. It's just all it is mixed. It's just a matter of they keep at... In other words, the chanting is the most important element. Right? You keep at that, then the other things will come. It's said the devotee has all the qualities of the demigods, so it's just a matter of time. You understand? So what's more important is chanting and having that faith in the name and liking the association. That's more important than whether they're vegetarian or this or that. Doesn't matter. The point is that will slow down the development because those are distractions from pure chanting. But the main point is to continue the chanting. Not this thing is, oh, you're not a devotee, why are you chanting? You're just making a show. No, what's the show? The external is not the devotee. The devotee is the attachment to the name. You know, so I say they just keep at it. It doesn't mean that you won't get reactions for it, because it's, if you go through many marriages, you can't be happy. You know, saying if you look at it, just from the historical point of view, when we think of a happy person, does Elizabeth Taylor like spring to our mind immediately? No, she's not known for being happy. Like that, she's known for having 8 marriages, but she's not known for being happy. Yeah, so it's just point is this, you'll reap the result. That's right. Yes.
Sometimes it seems like devotees can get stuck if they're chanting but out of association, rather than if they're in association but maybe weak in their sadhana.
Get stuck? What do you mean by stuck?
Stuck like not progressing spiritually.
Not progressing.
What I'm getting at is, isn't it that the association actually is more important than the chanting, because that would bring...
No, the two go together. You can't say one's more important than the other. The thing is, you're supposed to chant in the association of devotees. Like you hear Srimad Bhagavatam, the association of devotees.
Yeah.
That's why it's brought up. Therefore, you get that one list of the 5 main items, is where there's hearing Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees counted as one, and so then worship of Tulsi is counted as the 5th. But if you take, you know what I'm saying? Because then the Bhagavatam and the Sadhu Sangha become merged. Right? Because the point is hearing in the association of devotees. But generally it's that you have the association, so we understand that, and you have hearing Bhagavatam, because you do other things in the association. So that way then the Tulsi, worship of Tulsi, gets merged back into worship of the deity, because it's part of the deity worship. So nothing's lost, it's just bringing out the emphasis. Does that make sense? So you have to have both. It's just like we said, the primary and the secondary, you can't separate them. But you have to know what's primary. Like that. So it's all about a chanting, but that's in the association of devotees. That's what it means, Samkirtana. If we're saying the Samkirtana movement, it means everyone's together. So now within that Samkirtana, then chanting Hare Krishna. We don't mean chanting on your own. We mean chanting with the association of devotees. Is that okay? Yes.
How to review that the elders like Bhishma Deva Mahayan didn't interfere or stop the Autreya's offense to withdraw from Kaustubh Bhagavan?
Because they're under the protection of the king. See, is that... The point is that here is that if Draupadi is lost in the gambling match and becomes a maidservant, then technically, though those who are cultured don't, but you can do whatever you want with a maidservant. Right? Cultured people follow, you know, rules. Uncultured may not, but Draupadi's question wasn't, why am I being dragged out here? That was never her question. Because if she's a maidservant, then this is what's going to happen, this is what happens. Her point is that who was lost first? And therefore, who was lost first, that defines whether she should be dragged out there or not. Because if Yudhishthira's lost first, he's not in a position to gamble her separately. So then it's illegal. Or, if you look at it, that from the standard, which is how Manu looks at it, is that when Yudhishthira's lost, Draupadi's lost with her, with him. Because you can't separate the wife from the husband. So when he became a servant, she automatically became. So then, again, there's no question of you gambling her separately. You can't do that. So that's her point, is from either angle, she's not supposed to be there. Her question is not about why is a bunch of, you know, ruckus kings dragging a maidservant out and you know they're in there being a little bit badly behaved while they're gambling and drinking, that they're taking her clothes off. That's not a question. You understand? Her question is on dharma. is that from either way you look at it, I shouldn't be here. Because if I'm already lost with my husband, I belong to my husband. It's none of your business to drag me out of here. I'm not a free maidservant. Right? She has a husband. Right? Because generally, maidservants, they're connected to the queen. So technically, the king is their husband. Right? But not separately from the queens. But she's not in that category. She already has a husband. And if he's already lost and you're counting as separate, how can a person who's lost everything, he doesn't have any possessions, how can he gamble now again his possessions that he doesn't have? So her point is I shouldn't be here. You know, so they're getting confused by this. You know what I'm saying? So it's just Krishna's arrangement.
So Bhishma Dev did the calculations and he got confused.
Yes. Yes.
At least for our standard, even for even nowadays in Kali Yuga, it's all bad. Even for our standard, that's even very, very bad.
Which is very, very
bad. The offense committed by to Draupadi in the middle of the.
No, but what offense has been committed according to modern standards?
Getting naked for all the kids.
In the modern standard, they actually have bona fide businesses of repute where it's all about bringing out girls and making them naked. It's actually, they pay taxes. Right? You have roads and you have schools because these people pay taxes. You know what I'm saying? So the point is defining, how do you define it? Because they're getting, the Bijamadeva explains later from what I've heard, he's telling Yudhishthira because he's eating, he's being maintained by Duryodhana, and Dhritarashtra, therefore he's sharing in that sin, so his intelligence gets clouded. So that's why you should always be careful about your association. Because even it affects these great personalities. You understand? Because what we're saying here is it's a question on dharma, not on artha. This is not on mundane ethics. Because the mundane ethics is that, you know, what do you mean it's not? It means you can go out and pay money and see girls, you know, not dressed. You know what I'm saying? So it's... You know, it's like men and women in the modern society, husbands and wives, they go to parties. The men and women can flirt with other men and women as long as it doesn't go past flirting. It's just something to kind of emotionally stimulate. But as long as it doesn't turn into anything, it's fine. Some people don't like it, but it's not considered wrong. You know what I'm saying? So you can't really get too bent out of shape from the modern standpoint. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
They go even further. They say infidelity can save a marriage.
Yeah, it just means it's how you say. I'm sure there's certain quarters of society that will.
I saw this as like national Danish news.
That's what I'm saying. There's certain nations that will say that. Probably yourself, and if you cross that bridge to the country to the north, then both of those countries might say, yes, it inspired, and you again were rekindled the original appreciation of, you know. You could drop a hammer on your foot. That could also work, you know. It's like that. You know, so.
It's to appreciate not being in vain.
Yeah. So it's like that, yeah. Yes.
There's some scholars who have mentioned recently that they doubt the veracity of this pastime, saying that it never took place on the basis of a lack of scriptural evidence for her being dragged out. But the
Mahabharata verses say.
Well, they trace it back and say that it's actually not there, specifically in the Mahabharata, this particular incident.
No, it's right there in the verses.
Well, anyways, there's a big paper about it on the internet.
And they can have so many things. As far as they're concerned, God doesn't exist. So it means that, you know, so what?
But one argument that they made why they doubt it is because Draupadi is being treated like a possession, and that within Vedic culture that this was not the actual practice.
Yes, that's there, but the point is she's being dealt with as a possession in the way of a maidservant or a slave. So technically you can do whatever you want, but the point is cultured people within this system wouldn't do that. You know, it means everybody has you know, would have maidservants or slaves like that, and they would never deal with them like this. But it's not that it can't happen. Just like you would never have a thing where a blind king becomes king. Why don't they work with that one? You know? It's like that. So, I mean, you have so many anomalies because you're in the material world. They're looking at it that there is a concept of a perfect material world. You know, they still somehow or another, you know, support, you know, Plato, that they'll come up with a perfect, you know, system. But there isn't such a thing. It can't happen. But it's also they have nothing better to do. You know, so they come up with these things. But it's there. It's there in the verses. It shouldn't be happening. That's the thing. But if it never happened or could not happen, why does Manu mention it?
It was an adulterer issue.
No, but Manu mentions that these things can go wrong. So why would Manu mention it unless it's an option that can happen? You never hear of it happening any other time. But it can happen. Like that. Because, you know, you're dealing with more here. You're dealing with why are they doing this? One is that we have to remember that Draupadi was the most beautiful girl on the planet at the time, you know, other than the transcendental girls in Dwarka. But amongst the, you know, the general princesses, she was the most beautiful on the planet. And there's a good chance that a lot or most of those kings that were there at the assembly had been there for a Swayamvar and didn't make it. So they all had an interest in her. And the suggestion came up from Karna because he was insulted by her. So being insulted as a king, being insulted in front of all the assembly of kings, that he's not a king, he's a sutta. You don't get worse than that, really. So now what's the worst thing for a girl? To be insulted. Right? So he's just trying to reciprocate that, tit for tat, right? Yeah, so then this is political. This is not, they're not thinking about Dharma, they're just thinking how to bother the Pandavas and for Karna, Draupadi specifically. You know what I'm saying? So there's a lot more happening here. So if everything was functioning on the level of Dharma, it wouldn't have happened in the first place. Because according to Dharma, then did the gambling match take place? Okay, Draupadi didn't come out. Did the gambling match take place? Because the point is you can't gamble if there's a professional gambler. Like the other day, I was using something. I forget what it was. And I was just you know, out of, what do you call it? You know, just nervous that you just do something, you know, just play. I was picking these up. There were two of them. And they had marks on them. And I was just throwing, dropping them, picking them up, dropping. And then after a while, I noticed I was getting exactly the same wet things. And then I'd adjust it, and then, you know, then you could see is that if you know what you're doing, you can take dice and whatever, you know what it is in your hand and how you throw it, you can get exactly what you want. Yeah. No, but these are regular unloaded dice, but these are how you throw them. You get the effect of the loaded. So that's why the rule, and you don't have to accept a challenge from a professional gambler, because that's not gambling. Because for him, it's not gambling. It's not chance. Right? You know, gambling's supposed to be gambling. Right? So therefore, Yudhishthira didn't have to accept that. It was against the law of that to begin with. So then they would have to say that if they want to go on Dharma, that the whole gambling match never happened. Mm-hmm. Is that? Mm-hmm. Yeah? Okay.
How comes that Julia being like so bad and believing that Krishna was very beautiful for her?
Didn't we already answer this last year? Yes. Duryodhana is so bad, but why did Balaram like him?
Oh.
Because in interacting with Balaram, he behaved properly. He was a good student. and you could probably say his best student. You understand? So the relationship Balaram has with him is as his teacher of club. Not that they hang out together and go drink pina coladas or something. Does that make sense? Yeah. No, but you're bringing in other things to it. It's just like this. Okay. You take pretty boy Nelson or something. Now, his mother thinks he's a nice boy. Does the rest of Chicago think he's a nice boy? No. So then? Because he deals with her nicely. So you base relationship on how they deal with you, and your relationship's only in that area. It's not in another area. He wanted to. Because he's a student. It's the same thing. You understand? You have to understand the context of the relationship. See, as in the modern context, we can't have a relationship with somebody based if we find anything wrong anywhere. But the point is what has that got to do with your relationship? The point is that in the point of relationship, whatever is the relationship, that should be maintained. Now, you don't extend outside of that if there's areas that you don't appreciate. You know, like let's say you can have someone who's a very good friend to hang out with, but you don't, let's say, work with them. You don't like the way they work, but you can like them as a person. You know what I'm saying? So these are more old school kind of things. You have that, that people would, you know, have relationships with others, but they wouldn't get involved in other things they did. You know, you might like him as a person, you grew up together, but you don't like his business practices. But that doesn't mean you cut off the relationship in that. But you don't bring up business, they don't bring up business. It's just understood. You keep the relationship in the area that it functions. But he didn't, so, you know, what if, you know, suddenly a whole battalion from Pleiades showed up, and then they, you know, they wiped out, you know, what if, you know, Bhumi Devi just, you know, opened up the earth and the whole army fell inside, or you could, you know what I'm saying, we go, what if, you know what I'm saying, what's the attraction of what if? What if is the sutra of Jainism. It's simply to create distraction, because you can't come to a conclusion. Well, what if, but he didn't. Balaram didn't. He came afterwards. He's the Supreme Lord. He could have come before. He knows that he's going to hit him with the club and kill him. He could have come before, but he didn't. So he's just coming because it's just the rasa. They're playing as ordinary people. So they do that. You know, otherwise, if it's always the same, how do you get the dynamic? If you have Krishna and Balaram always doing exactly everything together, where's the dynamic? You know, I'm saying, well, what's the fun of Arjuna marrying Subhadra if Krishna and Arjuna and Balaram are thinking the same way? Right? You understand? So that's the whole point. It's all for rasa. They're doing it for rasa because, you know, within an illusion, what does it matter? Does that make sense? Yeah. The problem is we take the material energy too seriously. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing.
Well,
yes.
Is there also the principle that however one surrenders to the Lord,
he reciprocates? Yes.
So Duryodhana surrendered as a student?
Yes. Yes. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because he surrenders as a student. He is dealing properly. He's doing everything. So naturally, on that level... Because Balaram and Duryodhana are only known as teacher and student. They're not known as anything else. Right? Arjuna is known as a student, as a friend, as a well-wisher, as so many different. Like that. So that means, but for Duryodhana, it never goes past student. Does that make sense? Yeah, because we always have to remember is that the material thing itself doesn't have that much validity. You know, it's like the question we were discussing before, is in the modern context, you first look at it, it doesn't look good. They're bringing some girl out into the assembly, they're taking her clothes off, looks bad. But for a society that its main source of revenue, right, if you check, the main source of revenue for the government is coming from meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex, and gambling. Like that. You know, it's like that bottle of alcohol, you know, probably costs, you know, $5-$10 to make. But you're buying it for, what, 100 or more now? Like that, 160, I think. So what's the difference between the two? That guy's making that much profit? Why does he have such a funny-looking shop if he's making that much profit? It's because that's all tax. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. That's by the big guys. I'm talking about the guy who's selling it. But yeah. Yes, and that also. You understand? So they make huge amounts of money off of all this. Like that. So that's the thing. The big companies don't pay so much tax. The little guys pay the tax. You know what I'm saying? So it's not. So the whole problem is everything's falling apart, and then within that, then we make stands. But what's the basis of the stand? You understand? So we're talking relationship as someone deals with you is how you reciprocate with him. So does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
You were saying before that the reason why they lost the kingdom was because they were not able to maintain piety.
Yes.
They had the kingdom, but there was previous piety, and then they lost the kingdom because they were.
Yes.
So we can look at the Western world, like Europe, Scandinavia, that have so many simple activities are going on. So it's still
that or people who have a little bit of piety left and are born over there. They have less piety, they're born in some other country.
Yeah, but there are so many simple activities, like yourself said now that the Texas
what you have to do is, like if we give an example about a rope and a snake, it's not a discussion about the quality of rope. You know, what kind of rope was that? Was it hemp rope? Was it sisal rope? You know, was it cotton rope? Was it nylon rope? You know, and snake, what kind of snake? You know, we're talking about a cobra here, we're talking about a viper, we're talking about a garden snake, you know, we're talking about a water snake, you know, are we talking about, you know, Godzilla was there, but we couldn't see his feet, so then we thought he was a snake, you know. I mean, what is it that we're, you know, is it about the rope and snake? No, it's about the concept of illusion. Is that we mistake one thing for another. So that principle of illusion, that's real. But we want to make sure that we don't mistake that there is no rope and snake. No, there is a rope and there is a snake. But by illusion, we think the rope is a snake. You know what I'm saying? So when I give these examples, it's not about the example. Right? It's just bringing out so we understand the point of discussion. So the point of discussion is artha comes from dharma. So therefore, Prabhupada said in the purport, like that, here, that is the way of persons who have no credit of pious deeds. By past pious deeds, one may become a king of a country. But because the results of the pious acts of Duryodhana and company were dwindling, it became evident from their actions that they were sure to lose the kingdom to the Pandavas. So in other words, if they continued doing their dharma, like Yudhishthira, then it would all work out. But they're not. They're inimical to the Lord, they're inimical to the devotees, and therefore then their piety is dwindling, you know, by the moment. Right? So even if they had stuff that would last longer, it is going away because of offenses. Does that make sense? So then naturally they can't maintain. So if countries are, in other words, if something's there, that means then they have some piety. And if something's not there, then it means the piety is changing. Does that make sense? We come from Sweden. Let's see. Okay. No, it's fine. Fine. Getting the geographic adjustments here. I was, you know, yeah. Okay. Where is the piety in Sweden? Well, it's like this. If it's said that if for a human being to live out in the forest is a life's preferred lifestyle, you know, and that's considered the mode of goodness, right? Living in the city's mode of passion, right? Does that make sense? So now in Sweden, what is the perfection of the distance between your house and the next house? 1 kilometer, right? Are we on the same page here? You have this house, it's red. It's got the little corners on it that are white and like that, and there's 1 kilometer between you and the next house, and it's all trees in between. It's not forest. Those are only bushes. Forest is another thing. That's huge, big. Yeah. Forest means, you know, Siberian. Now, that's a forest. You know, we take this little bit here as a forest. No, but in Sweden, that's not a forest. That's bush. That's insistent. Okay? So, they like that natural lifestyle. So, there's an element of mode of goodness there. So, there's something there. You know what I'm saying? It's just like this. If you go to downtown Sweden, right? And you sit yourself down somewhere, and who's going to be dressed badly? I mean, in the way of the girls showing more skin. The Swedes or the tourists? The tourists. So, therefore, in public, the Swedes, they dress quite well. When they're at home, that's another thing. You can walk around with no clothes on. That's another element. Like I was talking to someone from Finland. They were saying, because they were at Archipelago. You have all the islands, so you have the island. It's just, you know, the people on that island. He says, as a kid, you can walk around naked and nobody cares. It's just, you know, summertime, you walk around naked. It's just what you do, you know, like that. Because, you know, there's no one there other than the people on your island. It's just, you know, who cares? You know, so it's just, you know, they have their interesting traits here. But, you know, but in public, they dress nicely. You know what I'm saying? Which is the funny thing is that in the West, then you know, they'll dress scantily when they're out in the street. When they go home, they'll put on track pants and a baggy t-shirt. So something's weird here. You know what I'm saying? So they have it, they're doing better over there. So it's just, you know, where are you looking?
It's colder outside.
It's colder outside. Okay. Yeah, okay. So, but then that means they value heating within the homes. Well, most places I go, as you go into their homes, they're wearing their jackets and sweaters and that, and they're saying, this is inside. Where's the heat?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So the point is it's there, but what is the lifestyle? You're saying is that it's going on, but what does that mean going on? You know what I'm saying? Summer, what temperature does it hit? It's a heat wave in Sweden. Grandmothers are dying. Schools are closing. What's the temperature? 30. You know, over here it's just starting to warm up. Okay? What is it in wintertime? Minus what? Minus 30? No, minus 10. Oh, not so bad. Finland gets worse. Okay. You know what I'm saying? So where is minus 10 pious? You know what I'm saying? Where is that considered pious? Where are the coconut trees? Where are the banana trees? You know, where are the... You know, the antelopes, you know. And this is not the point when you start, you know, singing the American songs and stuff like that. You know. I don't think I've ever seen antelopes in America. They're supposed to be roaming around there, right? You know. You understand? So what's pious about it? Depends upon your what you're talking about. Polar bears think it's very comfortable up there. You know what I'm saying? But most people would not call it comfortable. You know what I'm saying? So you're taking a perspective that already is based on a sinful perspective and then calling that pious. You know what I'm saying? Polar bears, they got enough cold. They got enough hair. You know? The Inuits up there, they're comfortable. You know? Seals are there. It's all happening. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's a pious life, you can say, happens between the tropics. You know, that would be, and then a little bit past that, you know, where's the temperature is pleasant, you know. It's not too severe. You know, if your heat goes off in Sweden, what happens? You die. You know, you start burning your furniture.
Okay.
It's cheap and it's bulky. Does it burn well? Does it burn? Okay, yeah, okay, see? That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, plus that if you get, you know, things work out, then you get your job and you buy more furniture, you're set up for next winter. Okay. Wow, now that's practical.
What she means is there's universal education, you know, universal.
Okay, but she's saying there's universal education, there's welfare. Now, are those not pious activities? So then what's the problem? You're saying it's nice because there's pious activities. But you're saying, why are they having all this? Because they're not pious. But they're performing pious activities. They're tribals. Since when do tribals follow four regular principles? No, see, you're making a mistake here. You're thinking you're dealing with human form of life. I mean, you deal with human form, but you're not dealing with human culture. You're dealing with tribals. So in the Vedic system, the tribals are not vegetarian. Is there a problem? The Nishadas, if they're not vegetarian, is anybody jumping up and down about this? You understand? You're dealing with subhuman culture. They're tribals. What do you want? But they have some standards of trying to be work together as a group and support each other and that, so they're nice tribals. They're pleasant tribals. You know what I'm saying?
More pleasant than the Vikings.
Yeah, more pleasant than the Vikings. That struck me as that's the answer to your questions that, you know, about the interaction. Because the guys, when they're out, they're pillaging, burning, and raping. And then they're out for months and all that. Who knows what the women are up to. You know, so it's just part of the local scene. Yeah, so they're just going back to roots and it works because they're, yeah.
Isn't this what was supposed to be the most pious place on earth?
Who? Now, wait a minute. Means these questions are not a problem. But the process we're discussing about the Bhagavatam, be sure that you're keeping it in that context. You know what I'm saying? Because you have to, one is you have to know what piety is to be able to discern what is there and what's not. You know what I'm saying? So it's not about whether, you know, there's good and bad in the world and all that. The whole point is that the Bhagavatam principle is the whole material world is bad. It's just a matter of whether you have progressive bad or non-progressive bad. Right? If we're looking for, unless it's perfect, it's bad, you know, then yes, but then we'll never find anything progressive. You know what I'm saying? It's like this. Let's say we have a festival. Let's say, maybe you haven't experienced it before, we used to have Julan in the Gurukul. Like, you know that big Julan that goes over on that side? That was originally started by the boys in the school back in the 80s, and it's just continued since then. So when we'd have the festival, then the Julan was going on in the evening, then, because all the laborers are all Muslim. Right? So all the laborers, you know, would go home, take the bath, dress up, bring their family and kids, and come to the Julan. Take Prashad. So it's different. The place is different. You know what I'm saying? So Calcutta for the mess it's in, but you can walk around anywhere at any time of the day or night, and basically you're fine. You know what I'm saying? It's different. If the lights go off, you know, you're in the market and the lights go off, what happens? Everyone just sits there and waits for, you know, the lights to go on. But if you're in the West, what happens? You know, half the market disappears. You understand? So it is different. It may not be as good as it's supposed to be, but it's different. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's it. You know, it's like you deal with the local gundas here, you deal nice, you deal as a gentleman, they deal back like that. You know, it might not work out so good if you deal with a member of triad like that. You know, so there's a difference. You know what I'm saying? Mafia, maybe. You know, saying there's that element, underlying element of culture, though it's being lost. Does that make sense? Yeah, so like that, you have to be able to see. The idea is to catch what is useful and take that. Don't worry about the rest, because the material world means mundane. So you look for what's good, take that. Don't worry, like Prabhupada said, don't be surprised who leaves, be surprised who stays. You know, this whole thing, oh, this one left, how is that possible? Of course, if you're in the material world, it's possible. You know, I have a god brother here. Probably no one on the planet knows he's a god brother. He's been here in Mayapur as long as I can remember. He's been doing the exact same service, sitting in the same office since the 70s. No one will even know who he is. You know what I'm saying? So you look for what's, you know, so that's, now that's surprising. Others come up, they get big, dude, do so many things, and then they disappear. That's pretty ordinary for the material world.
I think it's very advanced because it's kept something.
Whatever. But that's the problem. It says, you know, that's more the thing to look at. So the more thing to look at is that stableness. But the point is the other person, you can say, okay, this big preacher, they fell down. But who's done what they've done? Who's gone out, made thousands of devotees, made, you know, so many temples, did that, distributed, you know, millions of books. Who did that? You know, who on Facebook that is making their comments about them ever did that? And anybody who has done that doesn't make those comments. Does that make sense? So you have to look for what's good. This is the whole point. Swan means you look for the milk. Water is there. You don't sit there. Swan's not grumbling, yeah, so much water. You know, the swan just takes the milk. You know what I'm saying? We bring out the maha plate, right? The 4 o'clock offering, all the fruits and this and that, and all the sweets and that. You know, and you bring a kid. Then what do? Grab the sweets. They go for the essence. You know, who cares about all the fruit, right? You know. Does that make sense? You know, you go for the essence. Like that. You know, you're not sitting and go, so much rice, you know? You just take the cheese sabji. You know? Right? You know, cheese sabji, the pakoras, you know, a couple of sweets, and you're good. Right? So like that. Then you'll find it works much easier. Because the point is that things are wrong here, that's why people are here. You know, another example would be, if somebody's not behaving properly in prison, is that very strange? No. But if someone's behaving nicely in prison, then you think, then that's special. So you look for that. So we're in the material world, which is Durga, a big prison. So if somebody's doing something right, now that's the thing to be noticed. That people do things wrong, hey, that's pretty, it's par for the course. Does that make sense? Okay, how are you doing? The message of Godhead is always like nectar to the devotees, but it's just the opposite to the non-devotees. Sugar candy is always sweet to a healthy man, but it tastes very bitter to persons suffering from jaundice. So that's the thing, is that the nectar part, that's not the part we take. Right? The political, the economic, the social, we take those part, which is actually, because it's, you know, that's the part we take is sweet. You know what I'm saying? But we have to look at it, no, it's actually the devotional, that's the real thing. Does that make sense? Yeah. Duryodhana was so foolish that he dared to insult Vidura. This was due to his bad association with Shakuni, his maternal uncle, as well as with his friend Karna, who always encouraged Duryodhana in his nefarious acts. Now Karna, he was a demon from last life. So he came through this life as a demon. Right? Doesn't mean he's not pious, because you don't become that big of a demon without doing pious activities. Does that make sense? You can have a mix? Yeah. Because it's just like, let's say you have your small-time petty thief. Okay? Then you have the big-time, you know, more organized crime people. You'll find sometimes those big organized crime people, they give in charity. You know, let's say they're from a very bad neighborhood. They make some money. They take care of the people in the neighborhood. You know, somebody in their group, you know, gets sick or dies. They take care of that family. As long as the relationship was there. So there's that mix. So you always get is that someone's never totally bad or totally, you know, like that, because it's a material world. So even the best guys do something wrong. Right? That's why it's there. In our scriptures, it's like that. You know, in the Old Testament, it's like that. Only in the New Testament, then everybody's like squeaky clean. Like that. But it somehow or another hasn't worked for them. But, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, so the understanding is that nothing's totally bad, nothing's totally good. So look for the good, avoid the bad. Does that make sense? Because you'll find always a mix. And that's, you're looking at it now, everything's going nice and that. But, you know, come back after some time, or what was it like a bit before? You know? So then, you know, it changes like that. Does that make sense? There's less people there. You can also run it a little bit more nicely. You know what I'm saying? How many people in the whole country? How many people in the whole country? 9 million. That's not even half of Calcutta. There's that many people go into Calcutta every day on the trains and buses.
You've got 5.5 million.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, okay. I guess we'll move on from this one. Vidura's humiliation by Duryodhana was described in the following three verses. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, quote, because Vidura gave wise advice, even today good advice is called words of Vidura. Like that. Duryodhana overheard Vidura's words, and swelling up with rage before his younger brothers and Karna and Uncle Shakuni, he spoke, who asked this Dasiputra to come here? He is twisted, spying on us those who raised him in the interest of our enemy, as if Duryodhana raised him. He's getting the thing. Dhritarashtra has given facility, but it's actually Bhishma has raised him. You know, so he's really out of line here. And why would he mention Dasiputra? Because, you know, everybody knows that. Why do you have to bring it out? You know, do you bring out that he's born from a pot? You know, like that, you know. You know, so you just don't do that stuff. You know. Yeah. I think one of the reasons that Duryodhana tried to poison Bhima is because Duryodhana mentioned that to, you know, the Bhima, the Pandavas, they're, you know, born from the demigods. So their mother actually has more than one husband. You know, so this is bad, low class. You know, just to insult Bhima. You know, they're not bringing in question here, pointing the demigods in that. You know, it's just, that's a little bit, you know. So then Bhima was feeling bad. And then I think it was Shakuni. Yeah, because he's the brother-in-law. So he says, what is he talking about? You know, his mother has been married twice. You know, because she had one of those things in the chart that the first marriage wouldn't work. So then in tradition, Indian tradition, then they marry the girl to a banana tree. Right? You know, and then that doesn't quite work out so good. Because generally the relatives take the tree and chop it up into little pieces. So it's kind of like, you know, like that. And so then... And then she marries the boy, so she actually has two weddings. And so then the next time when Duryodhana brings this thing up, then Bhima says, yeah, but your mother's married twice, like that. And then he got so upset, so he stopped, and he's thinking about it. Who knows this? And he says, the only one who knows this is Shakuni. So then that's when he took Shakuni and his whole family, all 100 members, and put him in the dungeon. Like that. And so therefore then Shakuni... Before he was just a member of the family, but now he's become the, you know, committed enemy of Duryodhana. But he's doing it by pretending he's a friend and giving him bad advice. So all this bad association with Shakuni, that's all planned, that he loses all his piety, you know, and that, because Shakuni, he doesn't have any family left except his sister, so it's not really. He doesn't have anything to live for, but he just has to live to destroy Duryodhana and his family, you know, all his brothers, to avenge his own family. So he's therefore he's professional in his bad association, right? Like that. But Karna himself, he was a demon, so this, he would think in that way. But we see he's given charity. That's why we brought it up, because it's not that being big demons like that means there must be some charitable thing. Small-time demons means not very much charity, piety. So therefore, you see, he could be pious and demoniac. Well, Shakuni, he's just taking up that mood of being demoniac just to destroy Duryodhana. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Right, because he came up with the idea of the gambling match. He came up with the idea of gambling Draupadi. Because gambling match is already bad. And then gambling Draupadi, now that's going to destroy the family. So he's probably been waiting for that one for a long time. So now all he has to do is sit back and encourage him until the war comes. Right? He insulted Vidura and ordered him thrown out of the palace with only his breath. Footnote 5. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Duryodhana said, if he stays here, he will destroy the whole family. Whoever is on my side should remove him from this palace. Do it quickly, do not delay. Only his breath should remain. This means beat him with canes until he is breathless. Like that. So Vidura, understanding, is just left himself. Why stay around with these people? Right? They think they're maintaining him. You know, it's like that. He doesn't understand. Being pierced through the ears by these wordy arrows, Vidura's heart certainly became afflicted. Above and beyond this, Vidura considered such an act of the external energy to be Lord Krishna's merciful way of detaching him from the diplomatic intrigues of palace life. Verses 14 through 15. Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 16 explains how the Lord's external energy worked on Duryodhana, while his internal energy worked simultaneously on Vidura. Because right, the same energy is working in both ways, internal and external. Like that. A pure devotee of the Lord is never perturbed by an awkward position, created by the external energy of the Lord. In spite of being very strongly insulted by Duryodhana's words, Vidura could see that Duryodhana, under the influence of Maya, the external energy, was making progress on the path towards his own ruination. He therefore considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme. Yet he also saw how the internal energy of the Lord helped him in that particular situation. Right? So he was able to go out and get good association. Right? Even though his home there, as pointed out before, is Dhamma, where the Lord liked to come. But by going out, he can also meet the Lord and be meet the devotees and do all that. So he'll get more association, he can more take advantage of the situation. A devotee is always in a renounced temperament because the worldly attractions can never satisfy him. Because right? As one goes, one understands that whatever you do, it won't satisfy. But, so therefore, I'm not performing my duties because the benefit I'll get. I'm performing my duties because how it can be engaged in the Lord's service. Is this all about? So the situation doesn't change. Right? So therefore, Arjuna before, when he's thinking about his own benefit on the battlefield, and then afterwards when he's self-realized and is not thinking about his own benefit, the duty doesn't change. Right? So therefore he's in a renounced temperament, but he does it very nicely. Vidura was never attracted by the royal palace of his brother. He was always ready to leave the place and devote himself completely to the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Now he got the opportunity by the grace of Duryodhana. And instead of being sorry at the strong words of insult, he thanked him from within because it gave him the chance to live alone in a holy place and fully engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. Right, so he only stayed there out of that he could do some benefit for his brother. But otherwise, for him, it's not. The word gata vyata, without being sorry, is significant here because Vidura was relieved from the tribulations which trouble every man entangled in material activities. He therefore thought that there was no need to defend his brother with his bow, because his brother was meant for ruination. You don't need to defend something that's not going to, it's not undefendable. Thus he left the palace before Duryodhana could act, right? Otherwise, if he just stood there, then Duryodhana would have got his people. If he walked, then they figured, okay, he'll leave on his own, less trouble, right? You don't have to look around for a cane, right? Maya, the supreme energy of the Lord, acted here both internally and externally. Footnotes. Okay, now here's a bigger point. Yes, so it is. So, yeah, the point being is that she's doing both at once, right? Duryodhana, by this action, is being more entangled. But Vidura, by this same situation, is becoming free. So that's the whole beauty of the system, is that yoga maya and maha maya, they can function simultaneously. Okay? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi.